Welcome to the Real Talk with Dana podcast. I'm your host, Dana Monsees, licensed dietitian, nutritionist, and body image coach. On this show, you'll learn how to listen to and trust your body instead of trying to control it. We'll dig into the healing power of nutrition from a non-diet, weight-inclusive, health-at-every-size approach. My guests and I will guide you through how to heal from digestive issues and hormonal imbalances, all while making peace with food and your body without obsession or restriction. On today's episode, we are going to be digging deep into some nutrition science about thyroid disease, specifically about hypothyroidism, the adrenals, and leaky gut. And it's going to be with Dr. Becky Campbell. So, surprise, this episode is actually an old episode that I aired almost 2 years ago. So a lot of you new listeners around here, hey, love ya, probably haven't heard this one yet. And it is one of my favorites that I have done. Plus it's so packed with information that I figured it's time to bring this one up again. So Dr. Becky Campbell is our guest today, and she is a functional medicine practitioner who is sharing her personal health journey through sickness with conventional medicine to finally finding health with functional medicine. So we are diving into the causes of thyroid dysfunction and why we need to go so much more beyond food for true healing, from stress management to healing gut and liver issues, other hormonal imbalances, addressing heavy metal toxicity or parasites, and the list goes on to a lot of other things too. Disclaimer here, Dr. Campbell is talking about a specific healing dietary protocol for thyroid disease. This is one of those circumstances where it may be helpful to remove certain foods for healing if you have a diagnosis of thyroid disease or hyperthyroid or hypothyroid. However, if you have any history of disordered eating, chronic yo-yo dieting, morality around foods, getting stuck in the good versus bad, yes versus no foods, or an eating disorder and a diagnosis like thyroid disease, you should 100% pretty please definitely work with a practitioner who specializes in thyroid conditions and a non-diet approach to healing to make sure you don't fall back into old patterns. Getting into the details a little bit, we're going to talk about the multiple functions of the thyroid gland, which goes way beyond metabolism, the difference between hyperthyroidism and Hashimoto's, the connection between leaky gut, thyroid issues, low stomach acid, and adrenal fatigue, plus the most important foods and nutrients to include to support thyroid health and why. Should we be eating goitrogenic vegetables if we have thyroid issues? And then, what labs to ask your doctor for if you suspect you have thyroid issues? I would love for you to start by talking about your personal health journey and introduce yourself and how you got to where you are today.
So, well, I got to learning about functional medicine like most functional medicine practitioners, I think, by being sick myself. So I never really felt great, you know, even as a kid. I never felt, I think, as good as the other kids around me did. Mm-hmm. But when I was in my early 20s and I was in college, I felt really bad. And this was different than my normal, you know, not feeling great. I knew something was wrong, and no one really had any answers for me. I went to so many doctors, and, you know, of course, they directed me to 5 different doctors, depending on which body part right. I talked about. And, you know, they just ran such limited labs, or they were looking for, like, pathology. So, you know, for my stomach bloating, they would do like a endoscopy and then say, oh, well, you're fine, you know, or they'll do a colonoscopy for some people. And if there's no, you know, raging issue there, then you're fine. So I kind of went on like that for a while and just started getting worse. And I was increasing my exercise, and I was actually noticing that that was making me gain more weight, which I've kind of talked about on some articles and stuff that I've done, you know, with the relation to the cortisol issues and, mm-hmm. and weight gain. But, you know, just getting really frustrated, feeling kind of hopeless and like no one was listening to me. And then I found functional medicine, and I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I found this big center that did all they did was functional medicine. And it was amazing. I was so happy. You know, I had, I think, like an hour consultation the first time, which was crazy because no one gave me
so different.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, they found I had a thyroid issue, and they did that by doing much more thorough lab testing than they were doing in the conventional medicine model. Plus, they were using different lab ranges, which is such a big part of this. And then, you know, not only did they find out that I had a thyroid issue, but they started looking for what was causing it or what was contributing to my symptoms. So after working with a functional medicine practitioner for, it was, you know, a few months, I mean, right away I started to feel better, but you know, it took about a year. And then even as a practitioner, I've learned more things and tested myself for other things and found, you know, there was other things I was struggling with. But, you know, overall, the point being is that there was, you know, the conventional medical model, which was me looking fine to them, and then the functional medicine model, which is I found all of these issues and had to work on them.
Right, exactly. And it's so crazy because, I mean, that was my same experience before I got diagnosed with celiac, was I went for an endoscopy in college because nobody could figure out what was going on with, funny enough, all of these digestive symptoms. Like, you should probably look at what I'm eating, but no one ever did.
Right.
And then I actually got the endoscopy back, and they were like, oh, no, you don't have celiac. You're fine to eat gluten. But then later went on to get the genetic test, and I guess after, you know, a couple more environmental triggers down the line, I did actually have it. I just didn't have as much inflammation at the time. But I'm really excited to be talking about all things thyroid today, because this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart, because I did have hypothyroidism a couple of years ago, and there's Hashimoto's in my family, and my mom and my aunt are twins, and they both have low thyroid hormone levels, and so it's basically rampant in my family. I think it would be helpful if you could explain to people, most people know that the thyroid is the master metabolism endocrine gland, but what about the other functions of the thyroid?
Well, we have thyroid hormone in just about every cell in the body. So it's either directly affecting our organs or indirectly. Either way, it's one of the most important, you know, hormones to have the proper amount of, because it's the endocrine system, it's the cardiovascular system, the GI system, the nervous system. I mean, it's every system in the body. So, I mean, it's just a little gland that sits right in front of your throat, but it's just so important, and people really don't realize the importance of it. But because it does, you know, it affects so many different parts of the body, this is why there's so many random symptoms. And it's unfortunate, but most people get sent to 5 different doctors per, you know, one doctor per symptom, when it's really all about the thyroid.
Right, exactly. And then there are a couple main buzzwords that people will hear about thyroid conditions, like hypothyroid versus hyperthyroid versus Hashimoto's. So can we talk a little bit about the difference between those three?
Yeah. So hypothyroid is where you're not producing enough thyroid hormone. And then hyperthyroid is where you're producing too much thyroid hormone. And they kind of give, they both give symptoms, and they're pretty much opposite symptoms. So hypothyroid would be more weight gain, fatigue, feeling cold all the time, constipation. And then hyperthyroid is where you're hot all the time, you have anxiety, so you're a lot of times not tired, you're kind of overly ramped up. And, you know, weight loss instead of weight gain. And then there's Hashimoto's, which is the autoimmune disease, which is not a thyroid issue. It's an immune system issue. So it's the number one cause of hypothyroidism, but not everybody with hypothyroidism has Hashimoto's. But it's basically where your body is assigning your thyroid as the place it's going to attack. And so by this process happening, you're starting to eventually deplete your thyroid hormones. But it's so important to test for Hashimoto's. I test everybody for Hashimoto's, because if you're only testing thyroid hormone levels like TSH, T3, T4, you're waiting until this attack has been going on for a long time for some people, and then it's really depleting those hormones when you could have just, you know, stopped this issue a long time ago by looking at the antibody markers and, you know, looking to see where all this was coming from.
It's so cool that you go into, you know, because there are plenty of books that just talk about food, right? Or there are plenty of books that just talk about healing your lab values. But I haven't seen a thyroid book yet that talks about all of these different facets that you need to tackle in order to truly heal. So can we go into that a little bit?
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things that can trigger a thyroid issue. This is what people don't understand. You know, if they do finally get that thyroid diagnosis, whether it's hypo, hyper, Hashimoto's, Graves' disease, whatever their diagnosis is, then they're typically just put on medication and sent on their way. And the problem with that is you're not really looking into where this is coming from. So I talk about the seven most common triggers, and there's more, but it's the most common that I see, which is number one, I always look at the gut. You know, the gut is where everything starts. You know, any health issue, you can probably relate back to the gut. So you want to be looking for infections like yeast overgrowth, bacteria overgrowth, parasites. You want to look at small intestine bacteria overgrowth, which is referred to as SIBO. You want to look at leaky gut. You know, leaky gut, in which you said you talk about leaky gut a lot too, is it's like an open doorway to autoimmune disease. So since the number one cause of thyroid or hypothyroidism is an autoimmune disease, Hashimoto's, we really want to make sure that you don't have leaky gut or you don't have these infections which lead to leaky gut. So I think that that's probably the priority. I start every single person by testing their gut. And then we look at the adrenals too, because the adrenals run on the same axis as the thyroid. So they literally work hand in hand. If your adrenals aren't, you know, if you're having stress on the adrenal gland, it's going to cause stress on the thyroid and vice versa. So you really, really want to look at that. And there's a lot of different things that you need to address when addressing an adrenal issue. You know, food sensitivities, which goes along with leaky gut. I truly believe that most food sensitivities are caused by leaky gut. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, viruses, you know, I'm sure everyone at this point has heard people talking about Epstein-Barr, you know, the Epstein-Barr virus, how it's really driving thyroid issues, and heavy metal toxicity. That was a big problem for me. I had really bad mercury toxicity. So I had 5 amalgam fillings in my mouth and I had all of my by someone who was not a biological dentist. So that it really gives you a lot of exposure to the mercury, which, you know, having those fillings in your mouth before you get them removed, give you a lot of exposure, but when they remove them is when it really gives you the most. So that mercury can get into your tissues in your body and it can get into your thyroid gland. So you really have to look at all of that stuff to really diagnose, you know, what's going on with the thyroid and to know how to get the thyroid disease to go into remission.
Right. So say you have a patient like yourself and they have, you know, they have adrenal issues going on. They have the Epstein-Barr, they have this heavy metal toxicity, which is all causing these thyroid issues to happen. How do you decide where to start?
I start in the gut always. And I used to do like testing on everything right away. And I don't do that anymore. I start with diet and liver support first and foremost. And then I test for gut issues. So if someone doesn't have, because an example would be, you know, gut issues can lead to adrenal issues. So I'm not just going to work on the adrenals without working in the gut first.
Right.
So that's kind of how I start. And then I just, a lot of people, if you change their diet, you support their liver, you get them, you know, nutrients back in their body and you get their gut healed, they'll be better. I mean, that's really all they need. Some people don't even need to do anything more than change their diet. It really just depends on the person and what's driving it. But then if they are still having some issues, then I start looking at the adrenal hormones, the sex hormones, then I start digging into viruses and heavy metals.
Right. Okay. And then, so we mentioned gut health and we did mention adrenals too. So I'd love to do more of a deep dive into the connection between leaky gut and thyroid issues, because I know you mentioned in your book how hypothyroid has a really close connection with gastrin and low stomach acid, which can then lead to SIBO.
Right, exactly. And we need good bacteria in our gut to convert our thyroid hormone T4 to T3. T4 is the inactive version of thyroid hormone, and T3 is the active version of thyroid hormone. So if we have issues with our gut, which can lead to leaky gut and vice versa, then you're going to have problems converting that T4 to T3, and that can lead to thyroid issues or, lead to a lot of the symptoms also, terrible fatigue and all of the symptoms that you can have with thyroid issues. I think that's kind of the most common reason I see that the gut is directly affecting the thyroid numbers. And then if you look into how leaky gut is affecting the thyroid with autoimmune disease, the, about 70% of the immune system is in the gut. So if you want to have a healthy immune system, you have to have a healthy gut environment. So that's that kind of direct connection between leaky gut and the immune system and the thyroid.
Right. And then there are a ton of researchers, especially like Dr. Alessio Fasano, who say, you basically can't have autoimmune disease without having a leaky gut.
Right. Yeah.
So then what about this gastrin and low stomach acid connection to hypothyroid?
Well, I think that goes to, anytime I see someone with SIBO, which is that small intestine bacteria overgrowth, that's when I see it's typically, and not always, there's a lot of causes of SIBO, but it's typically caused by the low stomach acid. And unfortunately, people are being put on these PPIs, which are lowering their stomach acid even more. And this is when people, a perfect example is someone who goes to their gastroenterologist for IBS symptoms. They get diagnosed with IBS, they get put on a PPI, which lowers their stomach acid. And the issue the whole time is low stomach acid, it's not high stomach acid. So then it causes that backup of bacteria from the large intestine to go into the small intestine. And that's when you start to have that problem with the conversion of T4 to T3. And so it's directly affecting the thyroid at that point.
Right. And if we continue to lower the stomach acid, then you're also removing the body's first chemical barrier to any kind of infection or virus or parasite. So you might be actually opening yourself up more to get even more damage down the line by doing just what you thought or your doctor thought might actually make you better.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, I feel like the intentions are right, with a lot of the doctors that people are going to, but it's just that they're not, well, it's, you have to take responsibility for what you're learning yourself, I guess. But, the schooling that they're getting has teaches them nothing about anything like this. So it's they just don't even think of it being low stomach acid. It's always that it's, acid reflux being caused by high stomach acid, and it's really usually the opposite.
Right. So let's talk about stomach acid a little bit because there's a lot of confusion. Because, as you said, mostly doctors are thinking, and a lot of patients are thinking, oh, I have high stomach acid because I have all this reflux going on. But how can you differentiate between the very similar symptoms of low stomach acid versus high stomach acid?
Well, I think that the symptoms are very similar. I mean, I think that people are getting bloating, they're getting acid reflux, they're getting heartburn. The list kind of goes on and on, but that is when people think you have too much stomach acid. But in reality, most people don't. Most people have too little stomach acid. So, I mean, you can get probably 20 to 30 symptoms just from having too little stomach acid. Fatigue, deficiencies in vitamins, which are leading to fatigue, neurological issues, even. It's crazy. You can get so many different symptoms from having low stomach acid. But, some people don't test at all for anything for stomach acid. I look at lab tests, the blood lab tests at total protein. And I think if the total protein is under a 6.9, then the chances of hypochlorhydria, which is low stomach acid, are really high.
And then do you recommend any of the like at home tests for stomach acid as a preemptive measure if someone can't go in to get their total protein taken, like the betaine HCL challenge or the baking soda test?
Yeah, you can definitely do that. I mean, I don't typically do the baking soda test, but I do whenever I give the HCL, I do have patients kind of titrate up based on what their testing shows, you know, how many you're taking till you get that kind of heartburn feeling and then bringing it back down and that's your dose. And if that happens, then you know that you have the issue.
Yeah, I love doing that test with a lot of my clients, especially the ones with gut issues, because it's such an easy way to show them directly, you know, if you're not noticing this warming sensation after you take these stomach acid pills, then that means you need to keep taking more until you can feel it. And the more that you take, the lower your stomach acid is, which means we really have some work to do. So then relating back to the thyroid, all of this, if you have low stomach acid, you're not going to be able to produce enough gastrin, and then you're going to get the hypothyroid symptoms, right? Okay. So that's the gut. So then let's talk about the connection between thyroid issues and adrenal imbalances and the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis, because I bet a lot of people have heard of the HPA axis when we talk about adrenal fatigue and cortisol resistance and stuff. But what about the thyroid component of that?
Well, like I said, it runs on the same axis. So the hypothalamus tells the pituitary what to do as far as hormones goes, and that relates to the adrenals as well as the thyroid. So a lot of people take the thyroid out of that equation and just talk about the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis and don't realize how close of a role the thyroid plays with the adrenals as well.
Right. So do you find when people are in, let's say, the earlier first two stages-ish of adrenal fatigue, when they're overproducing cortisol and then they're getting into that tired and wired stage, do you find that is there a correlation between people who tend towards adrenal fatigue and either hypo or hyperthyroidism?
I see it always, to be honest with you. You know, sometimes I see people who have really high cortisol and they've had, you know, thyroid issues for 25 years. But a lot of times also, you know, the cortisol's high, the thyroid's, you know, they're earlier in their diagnosis with hypothyroidism. And then over a long, you know, period of time, the more stress that they have on their body, the, you know, cortisol starts to go low rather than high, and then they're kind of in like a chronic stage of hypothyroidism as well.
So it can kind of be either way. If you have adrenal issues, you most likely have thyroid issues as well.
Most likely, yeah. Not always. I mean, you know, stress is the main cause of adrenal issues. And not everybody, I'd say probably everyone in the world has stress, just about, right? But not everybody has thyroid issues. I think maybe one or two times I've run an adrenal test and it's been normal.
Of
So,
all of the patients you've had.
yeah, and I work with mostly thyroid patients, but I work with all different conditions and issues. So I've plenty of times had people who have zero issues with their thyroid, but a lot of issues with their adrenals. So it can happen. You know, there's genetic factors, there's other things that come into play when it comes to thyroid issues. But I'd say that almost every thyroid patient I have definitely has adrenal issues.
So, what are some of the biggest, I guess, offenders that you see people eating that can really make a huge impact when we take these out to help heal thyroid issues?
Gluten, of course, because of, you know, molecular mimicry. So the body kind of confusing the thyroid gland and the gluten and attacking the thyroid gland when you're eating gluten. So this is a must for me. Like, I will not work with someone if they won't take gluten out of their diet. And one thing I really like to point out is some people come to me and they'll say, I've removed, this is like before we ever worked together, they'll say, well, I took gluten out for 6 months and I didn't notice a difference. That's only one piece of the puzzle. So, you still really need to keep the gluten out. And I always tell them that just because you don't, you're not magically better, it doesn't mean you need to keep eating that food. So gluten's number one. Dairy is a very big problem, especially with Hashimoto's, because Hashimoto's is an inflammatory disease, and dairy, especially conventional dairy, is very inflammatory. So I definitely always say remove those. Grains is another one. I mean, grains they're inflammatory. They can, you know, they're an anti-nutrient, so they can actually deplete nutrients in the body that we need. So I really don't like people to eat grains. And I really honestly don't get a lot of kickback from that, or, you know, people complaining about that. I think that maybe it makes people nervous at first. And then there's so many options now with, you know, staying with grains and gluten out of your diet that it's, you know, getting easier and easier to do that. Mm-hmm. And then sugar, you know, I never really recommend anyone eat just regular sugar, you know, table sugar. But there's so many ways that you can have sweet desserts without using sugar. So that's really what I try to teach people, is not to feel deprived, but just to take inflammatory foods out of the diet. And there's so many ways you can have delicious food all the time without eating any of those.
But so going back to the gluten for a second, you mentioned molecular mimicry, but I bet there are a ton of people that do not know what that means. So could you explain that a little bit more?
So it's basically where the makeup of gluten and the makeup of our thyroid cells are very similar. So when our immune system, it can confuse, when you eat gluten, it can confuse that for your thyroid. So your body will literally start attacking your thyroid every time you're eating gluten. It's just like a case of mistaken identity.
So if you have a predisposition to any kind of thyroid issues, then gluten could be a very triggering factor for you.
Right. Especially autoimmune thyroid issues.
Right. And not even to mention that if you have any kind of inflammation or a predisposition to thyroid conditions or gut conditions, then gluten is one of the main things that can open up the zonulin and the tight junctions in the gut, exactly. Which can then create even more inflammation going through the whole body, and then can really hurt the uptake and the conversion of the thyroid hormones in the gut.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Okay, so then we talked about the foods that are definitely going to hinder healing, but how about the foods that are going to help healing, and why these particular foods?
Well, when you look at the thyroid, you know, selenium is one of the most important nutrients to support thyroid health, selenium and iodine. But, you know, there's a big debate on whether you should have iodine if you have Hashimoto's. And, you know, a lot of people are coming out now with interesting information. And I think I first heard this from Chris Kresser, but, you know, where basically, you know, I was always taught, don't give any Hashimoto's patient any iodine whatsoever. Because it can inflame them even more. But then I started hearing like Chris Kresser and others talk about it's the selenium deficiency with the iodine that's going to cause the inflammation. So then I started to really get into giving patients, you know, not just selenium supplements, because I really try to use food as much as possible, but introducing foods high in selenium. So, sardines are high in selenium, which I hate, so I don't eat those. But some people do like them. Eggs are high in selenium. Grass-fed beef is high in selenium. Chicken, turkey. So it's really not hard to get selenium in your diet. You know, of course, you know, organ meats are very high in selenium, but not everybody likes those. So you have to just kind of find the foods that you like that are high in selenium and eat those. And then, of course, the easiest food is Brazil nuts. And you can get your full dose of selenium from 2 to 3 Brazil nuts a day. So I would highly recommend making sure that you're getting high selenium foods in your diet. And then, you know, going back to the gut, you want to support the gut. So that's why, you know, you'll see in the book, I do some recipes with fermented foods. I try to throw them in wherever I can, because it really helps to build up the good bacteria and support the good bacteria in the gut. So healing foods like bone broth, which, you know, everyone talks about bone broth these days, but it's because it's so good. It can really help with leaky gut, which we've been talking about, you know, being a huge problem for thyroid issues. So, you know, healthy fats like avocado and wild salmon and, you know, coconut oil, that type of thing.
I have one particular question because I get this question all the time. So what about the goitrogens and like the cruciferous vegetables?
Yeah. And it's so funny. Everyone keeps asking me about this, but it's true because there's a lot of different information out there. So I think that, and this is why I actually made like a graphic in the book about this and kind of explained it. Goitrogens are so full of nutrients that I would hate to say just don't eat them because mm-hmm. it's a lot of really healthy food. So if you cook goitrogens, it can really lower the goitrogenic effect. So, and then there's some that are higher goitrogenic effect than others, you know, like cassava, and I talk about this specifically in the book, cassava root and sweet potatoes, they're lightly goitrogenic. So I use those in a lot of recipes for thyroid patients because it's a really good healthy carb mm-hmm. that thyroid patients really need. So I think with most things, you know, you're eating and, you know, putting in your body in some format, but you have to listen to your body. So if you're eating goitrogens and you're getting a goiter where, you know, you're noticing your throat swelling or having trouble swallowing, any of those symptoms, then yes, you need to stop eating that. You know, I think it's important to really pay attention to the effect that food's having on us. And sometimes it's hard to know if it's happening right then or if it's happening days later. So it can be hard to figure that out. But if you're eating goitrogenic foods and you're getting that the issues with the throat where you're feeling swelling in there, then, you know, you'd want to start cutting those out. But I think if that's not happening, you know, cooking those is a really good option so that you can keep them in your diet.
Right. Okay, good. I love that. I get that question all the time. And sometimes I have trouble explaining it to people because they've heard from so many sources that you should never eat goitrogenic foods if you have any kind of thyroid condition because it's going to inhibit the conversion of this and this. It's like, okay, but wait a minute. There's so many benefits right. in these sulfur-rich vegetables, especially if you have, you know, any liver or detoxification pathway issues that exactly. they're going to create so much more of a benefit than any minimal harm that they might do.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, Dr. Karazian, who's amazing, I really love him. He's done some great stuff and I've learned a lot from him. He, you know, says throw out the goitrogen list and just make sure you don't eat gluten. So it's really depends on who you ask. And again, I think it goes back to each individual and kind of, you know, doing it in the safest manner you can, which is cooking it and seeing how you do with it. So different for everybody. You know, generally, I think that thyroid patients do better with some carbs. Mm-hmm. And I know this because I've worked with thousands of people. And when I first start people, I do have carbs in their diet. And that's, you know, this is why I created this book, because I wanted to give people that first 4 weeks of what I do with everybody so that they can do it on their own, because it does, that's where I see probably the most drastic difference. So within the first 4 weeks, I think, you know, just putting people on the specific type of diet, like in the book, which does include carbs, people do feel good. They're getting more energy. They're sleeping better. Their hair's not falling out anymore. But then when someone comes back with gut issues, you know, if I do testing and I see that they have a gut infection, I do have to put them on a very low carb diet. I don't do a no carb diet typically, but I'll do a very low carb diet. And some people do fine with it, but some people start to go bad. You know, they start to feel bad again. And not just feel bad, because that can be die off from killing whatever's going on in the gut, but they're losing their hair again or they're losing their energy. And then once we're done with the gut protocol and we start adding carbs back in, they start feeling good again. So I think, you know, thyroid patients overall tend to do better on a, you know, a moderate carb. You know, I say typically maybe like a half of a green plantain or something along those lines for breakfast, or even a quarter to half. and then maybe a half of a sweet potato at some other point of the day, or a little bit of low glycemic fruit, somewhere around there, which is still probably considered on the lower end of the, you know, carbs. But I do think that people need carbs, or do think that thyroid patients need carbs for the most part. Like, yeah. You see all different people do well on all different types of things. And I have a lot of respect for the keto community, because I've seen people's lives completely change from doing a keto diet. It's just not something I typically do in my practice.
Right. So listen to your body and see what works for you, because what works for someone else might not necessarily work for you.
Right. Exactly.
I really feel for people, because, you know, as practitioners that are trained in reading research and statistics and how to interpret all of this stuff, it's fine when we have an overload of information, because you can kind of take what you find works best from the evidence and then what works best in clinical practice. But if you're just someone who's trying to figure out what's going to work best for you, you can have people on one side that are like, no, you need to do an autoimmune protocol, and you need to make sure you're including at least 150 grams of carbs a day and starchy vegetables and all this stuff. And then on the other side, you'll hear people that are like, no, keto is totally fine for women, and keto is totally fine even if you have hormonal imbalances. And it's like, the problem is, like, there could be someone on this one side with keto for whom they were able to heal their thyroid conditions with it, but then there are plenty of people on the other side too who needed to have those starchy carbohydrates and the plantains and stuff, like you said, in order to put this in remission.
Exactly. Yeah. It's there's no one size fits all, but I can say that the program that I did put in the book works for most. So that is kind of what I went with. What I see working for most people. And, you know, one thing I do like to point out, and I don't think I talked about this enough in the book, and I wish I did, is that if you're doing some starchy vegetables, like let's say you're doing cassava and sweet potatoes, and you're getting a lot of bloating, well, that's probably because you have something going on in the gut. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a carbohydrate, like you shouldn't eat carbohydrates, you shouldn't be eating them right now. Yeah. But that's when you want to look and see what's going on in the gut. You need to go further. That's a big sign that there, if you're reacting to carbohydrates, it's a big sign that you have too much of yeast or bacteria or whatever in the gut, and it's feeding off that. So it's growing. So, you know, definitely listen to your body and look further if you need to.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, you'll never know until you try it.
Right.
You know, so yeah. Whether it's keto or higher carb or following the 30-day plan that's in your book, I mean, you can't just look at something and say, oh, that'll never work for me. Because if you never tried it, you don't know. It's like your patient who said, oh, I cut out gluten for 6 months before I saw you and it didn't make any difference. Well, okay, maybe it wasn't just the gluten then. Maybe it was also something else. Or there are plenty of people who say they're completely off gluten, but then, you know, on the weekends, they're like, oh, I'll have a couple beers, or, you know, I'll just have a little bit of this. Or they might not even knowingly be eating gluten because it's in so many hidden things like salad dressings and roux. And when you go to a restaurant, you never know what they're cooking in unless you're asking the right questions.
It's on the vegetables in restaurants, which is always like mind-boggling to me. You have to ask for the gluten-free menu, and then you have to pick something off of that menu, because they will literally put it on your broccoli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to ask for the gluten-free menu, and then you have to specify that it's gluten-free. Like, I have celiac, and they're like, wait, so is it serious? And I'm like, oh, God.
You're right.
Is it serious? Like, maybe I should just go to another restaurant. Just kill me now. I wanted to die inside for the next couple of days. No big deal. Okay, so if someone suspects that they have some thyroid stuff going on, because you talk about in your book how when you go to a primary care or just a general practitioner, they're not going to run the full spectrum of thyroid labs. So what should people ask for?
You want to ask for TSH, you want T3 free and total, you want T4 free and total, you want reverse T3, you want T3 uptake, and then you want the antibodies, which is antithyroglobulin and thyroid peroxidase antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
That is a full thyroid panel. I see TSH and T4 free being tested together always, and I don't even understand what they're thinking with that because they're pretty much one and the same, and we need to see what T3 free is doing mostly since it's the active form of thyroid hormone, but we need to look at the antibodies because so many people have antibodies and nothing's wrong with the other numbers yet.
Right. And all of that is listed in the book, so you guys don't need to write all of that down.
Yeah, and the ranges, because the ranges in conventional medicine are so wide, so someone could be in there with a TSH of a 4.5 and be told that they're normal, when really I don't like to see TSH over 2.
Right.
So I definitely give the ranges in the book, and they've even gotten tighter a little bit since I wrote the book. I kind of make them tighter all the time because I'm seeing, some people come to me with a 2.5 or a 3 TSH and they're falling apart. So it's really all about how you're looking at it.
Right. So you need to match the symptoms with the lab values that you're getting. And even if they're within the Western medical reference range, it might not be within the functional medicine reference range.
Right, exactly.
And then if you run into, I mean, I guess you wouldn't run into this because you're a doctor, but so I've worked with a couple of thyroid patients and their doctors will refuse to do the TPO and the thyroid antibodies. So in that case, would you recommend that people get other inflammatory markers done, like CRP or homocysteine?
Yeah, I mean, I always do those. I think they're really important, especially homocysteine, because so many people have, the MTHFR gene mutation, and you're not really recognizing if it's an issue unless you test homocysteine. So, yes, but if they're not going to run the thyroid antibodies, they're most likely not going to run homocysteine either.
That's true.
So, fortunately, there's a different options. There's lab tests online you can order yourself, which the only downfall is how do you analyze them yourself and then what do you do about it? But there's so many functional medicine doctors who work virtually. That's what I do. I mean, I work with people all over the place, even out of the country. So, work with somebody who's going to test you for whatever you want to be tested for, and then who's going to tell you what it means and tell you what to do about it.
Right, take your health into your own hands because no one's going to stand up for you but you.
Right, exactly.
And then, so say they have these thyroid labs done and they figure out they have hyper or hypo or they have Hashimoto's. Do you then recommend that people go get other tests, not the full spectrum of them, but maybe go get a gut test and see what's going on, especially if they have some IBS type symptoms?
I think that they should, but I think that they should do it if possible, do it with a practitioner because it's very hard to know what to do once you get these test results. I mean, I'm sure you've seen test results. They can be a little complicated to even understand, or know what to do about it. And there's so much conflicting information online to treat yourself. So it depends where you are, depends what level you're at. But there's plenty of people. Like I'll work with people on one thing. I will order one test for someone if they want me to. They don't have to, some functional medicine practitioners, you have to spend $10,000, and order 20 tests and
That's
work with them
insane.
for 6 months. But I don't. I definitely don't work like that. But I think finding someone who will listen to you, listen to your main concerns, work with you piece by piece, order the one to two to three, whatever tests you want, and tell you what to do based on that is your best option. And if you can't do that, then there's, yes, you still want to definitely find out what's going on with your gut based on a test because you can have a lot of different things that seem the same. So the problem with all the information on the internet now is that people self-diagnose and then they put themselves through these torturous protocols and it's not even what they had. And they spend thousands of dollars on supplements and, just go through months and months of trying to figure things out. So
Just
it's,
making expensive urine, basically.
yeah, it's right. Yeah.
That's what I always tell people if they have leaky gut or any kind of inflammatory conditions and they're having gut issues. I'm like, I mean, you can spend all of this money on these fancy supplements and stuff, but if you're not absorbing the supplements that you're taking, you're basically just creating expensive pee. Like, you're not absorbing it.
Well, plus when it comes to leaky gut, there's reasons for leaky gut. So you want to try to figure those out. I mean, yes, I have a supplement for leaky gut, but it's never my first line of defense ever. It's something I do way, way later. I try to figure out why do they have leaky gut, and a lot of times it's due to what they're eating. It's due to infections in the gut. It's due to stress. So you have to work on all of that to get really to help get rid of leaky gut.
Right, because if you don't address the root cause, no matter what you do, it's basically just going to be like a band-aid approach. It's just going to keep coming back.
Right, because you can still band-aid in functional medicine. I've seen many people who are taking 30 supplements and have had no testing done. And it's crazy to me. It's basically, well, I had this symptom, so I'm taking this. I had this symptom, so I'm taking that. He assumes I have this, so I'm taking this. None of that's going to work.
Right.
You have to.
Why are you having those symptoms?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
You really, really need to test for things.
Right. You got to see what's going on under the hood so you can fix it instead of just getting a new paint job.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, this has been super, super informative. Thank you. So, two things before I let you go. One is, what is one of the most influential books that you have read lately?
Okay, so I really like learning about how the brain and how our emotions and our thoughts affect our physical symptoms, how we feel physically. So there's a really good book that my friend Jen recommended called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And it's by Dr. Joe Dispenza. So it's basically just kind of teaching us of how our thoughts manifest into physical symptoms. And it's not even consciously, it's, subconsciously things that have happened to us over our life and how, it really makes a big difference. And this is why I even talk about in, the thyroid book that it's a lot of different things affect how much better you're going to get. And you really have to work on what's going on with your brain, how it's tied to emotions and how that's tied to physical symptoms.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I just did a couple of episodes on anxiety and caffeine and nutrition, so I'm sure that'll help a lot of people too.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And then tell people where they can find you and where they can find your book.
So my website is drbeckycampbell.com, and I have a ton of information on there. A lot of blog posts, videos. My book is on Amazon. It's at Barnes and Noble. It's at a lot of different online stores and local stores. And you can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Becky Campbell.
Hey there! Thanks for listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast with me, your host, Dana, obviously. And I just wanted to say, you're the best. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your family and friends. Maybe send a 5-star rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Why would you do that, you ask? Because this helps more people find the show so that we can spread the food and body peace word, break down diet culture, and the unrealistic beauty standards that make us all feel like we need to shrink ourselves with food and exercise in order to be worthy in the world, which sucks. For discussion on the show episodes, if you want to request a guest or ask a question, if you'd like some support, please join the non-diet community on Facebook, which is a free group where you can go get some community and support. I'll see you over there and see you next week.